The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my executive editor, John Dixon. John, you are back after what we're calling an invasive dental procedure. So yeah. For the audience, right, if you hear a little bit of a difference in John's voice, you might. But John, right, this will get better as time goes along. So,
yes, that eventually.
Whatever. Yeah. But we, you know, John called me this morning. I deemed his voice passable. And I know you guys have been dying to hear, the lovely baritone voice, of our executive editor. So we are back in the saddle. John, I looked this up this morning and this is going to be scary, as well as exciting. This is the calendar ahead. 36 days until the NFL draft, 50 days until the schedule release, about 120 days until training camp, 169 days until opening night. And you've been around a long time, right? Right in the middle age. That's going to go quick. As much as we're excited about the NFL season, let's try to enjoy the time that we have ahead here, right?
Exactly. Well, I feel pretty weird anyway because I took that vacation immediately after the season ended.
Right.
And then, you know, came back and went right back to work in the beginning of free agency. It's just been insane.
It has been a whirlwind. I think more of a whirlwind, it seems, especially around the league, not really for the Chiefs, but more of a whirlwind as far as player movement for some reason and big name players, I think. This free agency than maybe in the past couple of free agencies before. Here's what's in store for the editor show today. As you guys know, we'll hit reviews. We'll get into the Chiefs news. I know you guys want to hear our comments on this very weird, Legarius Sneed situation. Also, Hollywood Brown signs and comes to the Chiefs on a 1-year deal. We'll talk about some other interesting signings that I find around the league. We'll take a quick break and then it is rule proposal season. So the NFL will be voting on several potential rule changes for the 2024 season. So we'll pass along some of the ones that we find most intriguing, 5 intriguing rule proposals, and then we'll call it a show. But we have a lot to get to. We'll start with reviews. As a reminder, if you like the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show and really our entire Arrowhead Pride podcast network, you can leave us a rating and a review on Apple iTunes, and we will read it right here on the show. This one comes from Speargotten. Love the content, guys. I appreciate the time and effort that y'all put into this for our enjoyment. Keep it up. With that said, looking at our wide receiver core post-Hollywood Brown, I cannot get over Xavier Legette. His size, strength, hands, and speed are unreal. What blows me away, when you turn on the tape, is the 4.39 speed, 40-inch vertical, and 230 pounds of strength that translates directly onto the field. I am pounding the table for Xavier to become a Kansas City Chief. That comes from Dom. What I tell you is we have Ron Kopp and our wonderful team with Veach Season and Rocky Magana that are covering prospects in the NFL draft. So what I'm going to do is pass along the question to Veach Season so they can go into it deeper. What I would tell you is a couple days ago, ESPN's Mel Kiper Jr. Actually mocked Xavier to the Detroit Lions at number 29. They picked three ahead of the Chiefs because they were in the NFC title game. Wide receiver out of South Carolina. Here's what he had to say. Legette is rising in my rankings after he ran a 4.39 and tested well in the other drills at the combine. While I will quibble with South Carolina for listing him at 6'3", while he's actually 6'1", a big height guy, Mel Kiper Jr., he wouldn't hold that against him. Fantastic 2023 season with 1,255 receiving yards while averaging 17.7 yards per catch. Wow. He dominated cornerbacks on crossing routes, lining up in the slot and outside. This is a way to keep improving the Detroit offense. Seems like it would be a receiver the Chiefs would consider at 32, John. I know we're going to get more into Hollywood Brown. Before we get to that point, what I'd say, you know, briefly, and not to get into detail until a little bit later in the podcast, but I think the Chiefs made their splash in free agency, but I don't think they're done at wide receiver. I could see some other veteran role players at the position finding their way to Kansas City, and I certainly think by the time we get to the end of the NFL draft, they will have another receiver out of this draft class. It's a matter of will they do that in the first round at number 32, or will it be later on in the NFL draft?
No, I completely agree. I mean, they will probably find a player, something like Justin Watson,
right?
Someone who can be a contributor in the mid-range in the receiver room before they get to the draft, just because Brett Beach doesn't like to have any holes he has to fill on draft day. He likes to be able to always go for the best player available to him without concerns about player positional needs or whatever you want to call it. So I agree. I think we'll see that. And I think we'll also see the team take a wide receiver in the draft. And there are a lot of them. That is the thing that's really striking me about this. And in a situation like that, so much is going to depend on how individual teams evaluate these players.
Yep.
And guys that we think are not going to make it to 32 might actually make it to 32 on draft day. It could be a very interesting day.
And the Chiefs also, I think, benefit from the fact that it seems like a lock that four quarterbacks are going to go in the first round. So what that means is, as we know, Kansas City definitely doesn't need a quarterback. And so you're picking more 28 right out of the 28 prospects than
right.
32. A point on Legette too that I have here. I looked this up before the podcast started. John, you do a great job of getting all the mock drafts and keeping track of who's going where. And Legette was actually mocked to the Chiefs in 2% of the NFL mock drafts that we've covered for Arrowhead Pride. Most recently, both Mel Kiper and Daniel Jeremiah in their most recent mock drafts have actually mocked Adonai Mitchell, a wide receiver from Texas, to the Chiefs. I actually had an opportunity to talk with Mel Kiper on a conference call this morning. And one of the things that he highlighted about Mitchell out of Texas is that he doesn't drop the ball. We're going to put an article out later. By the time I think you hear this podcast, we'll have the article out about Mitchell and potential other pivots that the Chiefs might have. But one thing he said in his very, I can't even do the impression. I know that there's a lot of them out there, but a very fast and speedy is that he's very fascinated with the success that Patrick Mahomes has, just given the fact that the Chiefs had so many drops last year and Mitchell just doesn't drop the football. So receivers still on the radar. I don't think these guys who are experts mocking players to the Kansas City Chiefs think that just because they signed Hollywood Brown that they are done at receiver and maybe even in the first round. So we'll see if Legette makes it to Kansas City. This is our other review today. This is from Christopher. Absolutely love the coverage that you guys provide here at Arrowhead Pride. I've been a Chiefs fan since the Trent Green days, as that's when I could really pay attention to football. My two favorite shows are The Editor Show and The Great British Chiefs Show. Both shows are equally funny, but yet informative at the same time. Also, Serta is absolutely the best and always makes me laugh. Keep up the fantastic work, everybody. So,
wow,
that's a good review, so thank you to that. Again, if you want to hear your review right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, go to Apple iTunes, and of course, we always appreciate the 5 stars. All right, John, let's get into the Chiefs news of this week. And I got to say, this LeJarius Sneed thing, to me, with all the Chiefs Twitter or X involvement and the different reports from really respected, well-known media insiders and some of the local insiders and some of the pseudo-local national insiders, everyone kind of has a little bit of a different story, a little bit of a different thing to say on this. I know that I was out last week, so I was a little bit out of the mix on this story, but we were still covering it at AP. And one of the things I saw a colleague of mine from 610 Sports Radio, Carrington Harrison, he seemed to be on top of things. Like, you know, as I've talked to people, it seemed like his report that he put out on X was the closest to what's really going on here. And these were the notes from Carrington, John, that no team has made a second round offer for Snead. Snead would like, ideally, who wouldn't, to become the highest paid cornerback in the league. And that's been the major holdup. The Chiefs are fine with him playing on the franchise tag next season. I've heard that for a long time, that the Chiefs, you know, would be okay with him playing on the tag.
Right.
And the medicals are concerning. And I think there's some truth to all that. I think it's probably a little more muddled than anyone would like to make it out to be, just because when you have a player on the tag and you're trying to potentially trade him, a lot goes into it, right? Like, you're talking to different teams. Certain teams are placed differently in the draft. You're considering maybe a second rounder, maybe it's a third rounder, maybe it's a fourth rounder. Heck, we saw Justin Fields, who I would consider a franchise quarterback. What do I know? He went for a sixth rounder that can only turn into a fourth. I would have never expected that at the beginning of this offseason. And so I am to the point where I think everyone is hearing things, and not to say that anything is inaccurate, but I think everything might be a little true, a little false. I know that you probably have that point. Here's where I stand on Snead, just based on everything I've had with conversations and heard with conversations with people in the building, and just my general feel of it. And again, this is Pete Sweeney talking. You know, I think this is a very worth saying. I think this is a very fluid situation. So just because I'm saying this on this podcast today doesn't mean things will be completely different tomorrow or the day after.
Right. Yeah.
But here's where I'm at right now, John, and then I'll let you weigh in on this whole situation. I think that it's easy for me to understand why he wants to be paid the top money at quarterback in the league. And I say that because it's just ridiculous. Other teams come in and their best receiver, who eats on a weekly basis against other teams, come in and have a bad game against Steed. It's incredible. I mean, and you're not talking about receivers that are borderline elite. I mean, you're talking about Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson and that level of receiver that comes
right
in. So, you know, why should he take any less? And also, you know, when you think about the $19 million tag here, stands to make more money this year than he's made in his entire career. So, in a way, that's worth waiting for. And here's where I think it gets a little complicated, and CDOT alluded to this with the medicals. I don't know if a GM out there is going to take a risk with Legarius Sneed. Don't forget, he missed all the training camp with the knee stuff and time at practice throughout the year. Very clearly, there's something going on with this player's needs. And so now you're asking a GM, both from Sneed's camp and the Chiefs camp, to trade a second rounder, which we've seen how valuable a second round pick could be in the NFL. Heck, Travis Kelce, for example, was a third rounder. So think about what you can get in the second round. And you're asking them to trade a second rounder, maybe a third rounder, whatever it is. So that you're already giving up that capital. And now you're saying, okay, max top dollar for a player whose medicals are a little questionable and have been questionable in Kansas City. And it's one thing to pay a player on the tag, but I'm wondering if, much like these GMs, Brett Veach is looking himself in a mirror and saying, well, you know, we've been fortunate and we've managed this and he's been able to stay on the field for us, but do we want to offer top dollar even for a 3-year span? And then all of a sudden you have, and look, great player when he was healthy, but you have another Eric Berry situation on your hands where he can't get on the field. I mean, I don't think you want to find yourself in that position if you're Brett Veach or another GM. And so I find myself thinking, John, that the ultimate way this plays out is that you're not going to find a GM who wants to risk all of that capital, draft and money and otherwise. And so I think he plays a year in Kansas City and they manage it again. And then he walks, and then the Chiefs end up getting a pick back, probably in the fourth round, I would assume, maybe next year when he does hit the open market, and has to sign. Like, he can't just sit there and say, I'm going to wait for this deal I'm looking for. He has to sign with somebody. So those are my thoughts on it. And I kind of understand why it's so convoluted, because there's just a lot of moving parts here. And then I'll let you kind of weigh in here, John.
Well, you know, one of the things that's unfortunate about this whole situation is that the Snead trade drew a lot of attention from guys on X who like to say they have information when maybe they don't. And
yes.
So not only were, you know, trusted, reputable reporters putting information out there that sometimes conflicted with other information that was out there, you had these other sources, and I'll put that in air quotes, saying other things about the trade. Now, maybe they know something. You know, it's not unknown for an individual who has some kind of a contact inside of a football club to know something that maybe isn't known by most people out on the street. But I don't like to depend on that kind of information for the news that I'm getting. Some people do for whatever reason. I can't explain that. Mm-hmm. But it made the whole situation more complicated and more confusing. Now, personally, I'm of the belief that most of these guys, most of the reputable sources of information for NFL activity, and I'm talking about people like, you know, Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport and yep. Field Yates and these guys that we quote all the time at arrowheadpride.com, I think these guys are telling the truth by and large. Yes, it's possible that they're getting information that's being provided to them with the best spin based on who's giving it to them. Like, for example, if we get a report that there's seven teams interested in Snead, well, it's a pretty good chance that came from the agent and he's putting the best face on it. Maybe there were four teams that were really interested and three that were just sort of interested.
Yeah. And we always look at seven teams. It's like, and fans, I think their immediate reaction is like, well, why can't there be a deal?
Right.
A team being interested could be one phone call, and an agent with a straight face could put out there seven teams interested.
Right.
Three might be serious about it. And then now you're pressed up against it a little bit.
Right. But it's still a true statement that was given to the reporter, and he reports it, and it's an accurate statement. And then we have the situation like we had with Snead, where there was all this reporting that a deal was imminent in the next day or two. And people naturally presume that this means that they've been talking to the team about a trade. They've been talking to Snead about a contract, and all the pieces are about to fall into place. And then Adam Schefter drops this bomb saying that the Colts and the Chiefs haven't even spoken to each other about this deal. And it sounds like somebody's lying. And I don't think that's what happened. I think what happened is that it's more likely, in my mind, that the Colts were just concentrating on the contract part of it first.
Right.
And I'll tell you why I think so. And that is that there were reports from Colts beat reporters that were saying that the team was very concerned about how much they could afford to spend. The Colts have spent a lot of money in free agency this year. And if you're in a situation like that, I think it makes sense to approach it in that way. Can we afford to do this big contract? And until you have the answer to that question, maybe you don't even talk to the team about trade compensation.
Right.
So here's a way that I think, you know, most of these reports can end up being true if we just remember that it doesn't have to all be happening at once.
Yeah. And I think you're right. Like in that scenario, because the Chiefs have given the Snead and representation permission to go out there and look around.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
So if they don't come to an agreement on a contract, there's no reason for Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, to talk to Veach, because if they're not agreeing to an extension, Snead's not going to sign the contract and can't be moved anyway. So,
and it's not as if there wasn't already a pretty good idea of what the Chiefs wanted. You know, I mean, right away we were getting reports that they wanted a second round pick, et cetera.
As a hybrid old school and new school media, I feel like I'm right in the middle to comment on this. It was fun to watch how the new school media was going up against the old guard. And there was just like a lot of, like, you could tell that both sides were getting a little feisty when Adam Schefter appeared on the Pat McAfee show. You could tell he was like a little annoyed by it. And then, of course, it seems like, you know, the new generation, new media, if you want to say blogger X type of reporter, they're getting annoyed because they're not getting respect from the old guard. And it was just mayhem. I don't know. I'm always of the belief that, like, this is kind of fun to hear what's going on, but does it really matter? I mean, we don't play, like we just said, what did I say? How many days until 169 days until opening night. You know what? Whatever happens this week and next week, I'm not going to get upset about it because I know for a fact that 169 days from now, they will have this resolved. I mean, I don't know when it's going to come. John, probably when we're out to dinner with our girlfriend and wife, respectively, but it's going to come at a certain point, right? So like I'm not overly worried about it. And I think both things are good. I think the Chiefs have enough cornerback depth to be okay without Snead. However, I think if you're really going for a three-peat, and you're worried about his medicals, really feels like one more year on the tag is a pretty good deal, especially when you have the salary cap room. And speaking of the salary cap room, the Chiefs made a really nice salary cap deal, I think, for Hollywood Brown. In the next segment, after we talk about Brown, I am going to get into some of the contracts of receivers around the AFC. And John, I'll let you take over here initially with the salary cap numbers on Hollywood Brown. 1 year. Up to $11 million. I know maybe it wasn't as less as we thought to begin with, but still just a very good deal for someone who I think, I don't want to go as far as say lock it in top 10, but probably can teeter around the top 10 mark as far as receivers, top 15 in the NFL to get him on this contract. And you can go ahead.
Yeah, I think it is a good contract, but I anticipated, because we've seen it so often from the Chiefs, that when they say it's a $7 million contract with $4 million in incentives, most, if not all of those incentives will be not likely to be earned incentives that don't count against the cap until next year.
Right.
Well, this particular contract, more of them were likely to be earned incentives, meaning that Brown hit those marks or something close to them last season, which is the defining point for likely or not likely to be earned. So he ended up making, he'll have a cap hit this year of $8.2 million instead of $7 million as we first anticipated. So not as advantageous a contract as we often see in a situation like this. But remember that the standard here is Marquez Valdez-Scantling making $12 million to provide the production that he did, or Juju Smith-Schuster, who made, I believe it was $9 million, I think.
Yeah.
To provide, you know, second tier receiver numbers in one season in Kansas City. This is a good deal. And I think Hollywood Brown will do better than both of those guys. He's had a 1,000-yard season while playing for a not very good quarterback. So I think that playing for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense, he will have the opportunity to put up some real numbers. And I think that we'll be perfectly happy with the amount of money the Chiefs are paying him.
Yeah, this is from inside the organization shortly after the contract. The NFL uses a lot of this GPS tracking, and Brown is among the fastest in the NFL. And if you look at his size and weight, you know, 5'10", 180, I mean, it's the prototype of Tyreek Hill. I'm not going to say he's as fast as Tyreek Hill, but it's just a player and a weapon that the Chiefs have not had in 3 years. And without that weapon, they won 2 Super Bowls back to back. So now you're adding that into the mix on a year where, you know, you're trying to accomplish what no team has ever done. And I just like it because of the contract year aspect of it. We did a emergency Arrowhead Pride report, you know, once the Brown thing came through. I forget when it was, late last week. Thursday night, I think. Uh-huh. Anyway, just the idea that you get him for a year, there are incentives built in, which we kind of assumed when, you know, when you hear it's $7 million up to $11 million, you know where incentives are built in. And much like the Juju deal, and it's a different type of receiver, like again, more like Tyreek than one of these possession guys, there's so much motivation for him to do well, right? Mm-hmm. So if he gets, it's levels of incentives, but bottom line is if he gets 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns, it's an extra $2.5 million on top of the motivation that you're becoming a free agent, right? Like, mm-hmm. So yeah, of course there's the idea that the Chiefs could franchise tag, but you know, you don't really necessarily expect that, you know, with this particular player. So you're looking at the open market and you're looking at just the same exact thing that Juju was looking at. I can have this great year for Kansas City. I can be a go-to receiver. I could win a championship. And then at the end of it, for myself, I could go on and get that back, as the kids say, John. And
new school. New school reporting.
Yeah. We try to do a little bit of a both. This is a hybrid reporting character that I have. And I just think that that's so valuable. And KC does a lot of these really smart, valuable deals. And again, when you're looking at Hollywood Brown, who's had a couple down years and is looking to get back to that upper echelon, ultimate motivation for a very affordable deal. And then when you go to the receiver signings around the AFC, you start to realize the value there. I mean, his numbers were similar to Calvin Ridley, you know, over the past couple of years. I know that Ridley was out of football for a year. But Calvin Ridley goes to the Titans on a 4-year, $92 million contract for $15 million fully guaranteed. Jerry Jeudy, y'all know about Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy, he lays eggs in the division games. He lays eggs all the time. You guys watching root against Jerry Jeudy with the Broncos? He's acquired in the trade for the Broncos for the Browns. And he signs a 3-year contract extension worth up to $58 million, including 41 guaranteed.
Yeah,
the Jets.
Crazy.
The Jets, yeah. Mike Williams, 1-year deal worth up to $15 million. Like, I'm not saying that Hollywood Brown is above and beyond better than these players, but in the game of football, in the chess match that Brett Veach thinks about every day with his team, the Chiefs killed this. I can confidently say that without seeing a down of football, because he's in the realm and they're not committing anything. And again, he has the ultimate motivation to succeed. I don't know what these players are going to do that just signed these couple of year contracts, but I know in looking at NFL history, it's a lot more likely for a player who signed a big contract for a couple of years to maybe have a down year than someone who needs to perform well, to continue their career and do it in a lucrative fashion, John.
I totally agree. This was really a smart move by the team. I think the Chiefs had their eyes on this player right from the beginning.
Right.
I don't think
because there were draft connections too.
Yeah. Right. And they talked about him. He was under the impression he was going to be drafted by the Chiefs back in 2019. And he ended up being taken in the first round, 25th overall. So, you know, there's a long history here with Brett Veach being interested in this player. And it's interesting to me that no one has mentioned this, but Are you aware, listening to this podcast, that Marquise Hollywood Brown is the cousin of Antonio Brown? Did you know that, Pete?
I didn't know that. That's news to me. I just hope he keeps his shirt on, though.
Yeah. I don't know whether this should be construed as good news or bad news. Obviously, there's some athletic genes in the family. We can agree on that, right? Antonio Brown, at his height, was an amazing NFL receiver. But then, you know, he went off the deep end or something on personality wise and, and was no longer in a position that he could be helpful to his teams, whichever one he happened to be on at that moment. So let's hope we don't have any of that with Hollywood Brown. However, I'll have to say I happened to write up his interview. I guess it was yesterday or the day before. I've lost track now. It goes so fast these days. Mm. But I was pretty impressed with what he had to say and the way he said it. I got no kind of weird diva vibe from what he said or how he spoke or any of that. So let's just hope we get the good stuff that Antonio Brown had.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, Antonio Brown played big, but I'm looking up his measurables here. 5'10", 185. Hollywood is listed at 5'9", 180. Also, got to be really nice to look a player in the eyes for once when I get to the locker room. I mean, that is... You know, that's what a perk. But again, just to have the same measurables there. And I think like blood is a real thing, right? Like, I mean, you could compare players like that. I mean, I like it. Slam dunk. Of course, you know, you got to see how it goes, but just as far as offseason signings, I'm always impressed with how Brett Veach has navigated this thing. Like, now he understands, you know, this type of value contract that you have. You get a player that is really excited to play with Patrick Mahomes. John, I know we talk a lot about like the Chiefs and the Mahomes discount. I think the two to point to are Juju and Hollywood, right? Like if you're really looking at like, and again, I think there was some things that both players could gain by being with Patrick Mahomes, but at the same time, Hollywood confirmed that he took less money to be in Kansas City and, you know, I think part of it was wanting to play with Mahomes and Kelce and Rice and Andy Reid and everything like that. And again, you build in value for him. I mentioned some of the receiver signings around the league. I want to touch on some other ones. We mentioned Titans get Calvin Ridley. The Browns get Jerry Jeudy. The New York Jets, trying for, Aaron Rodgers 2024, part two, get Mike Williams. The Bills go and get Curtis Samuel. I think that's an interesting one. I'm interested in seeing what their offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, does with them. He was intriguing to me for Kansas City because of his like dual threat. I love that. I know that Andy Reid really enjoys that versatility. The Jaguars go and get Gabe Davis, and then a little bit of a lesser tier player. Patriots go and get KJ Osborne. I think seeing Keenan Allen leave the AFC West is a good thing. Mike Williams leave the AFC West is a good thing. You know, Josh Jacobs during this, free agency left the AFC West. I think that's a good thing. Deontay Johnson leaves the AFC. He goes to the NFC. I think you saw a lot of running back movement in the NFC, a lot of wide receiver movement in the AFC, John, but like nothing that really jumps out and scares me. And I just think it continues to play all into the hands of Kansas City. Cause you look at this list and who's playing quarterback for the Patriots? We don't know. Jacksonville, as much as I like Trevor Lawrence, you could say he took a step back last year. Josh Allen is legit. We know that. He has Curtis Samuel now. The Jets, what is Aaron Rodgers going to look like a year out of football? Cleveland, mess at quarterback. The Titans playing a second year quarterback, right? Like, so as much as it's great that these guys added these weapons, I'm not really scared by any of these big moves at wide receiver in the AFC.
Yeah. I've had all of these transactions underneath my fingers. I've done most of the updates to the tracker this season. And it's funny. I don't get any kind of a sense that any particular team is really running away with things. Right. Improving so much that they'll be hard to deal with in the coming season. In fact, my own impression of it seems to be that we're just playing musical chairs.
Right.
There have been so many transactions, many of which have gone for big money, that I'm starting to wonder if things really aren't going to look that much different in the league in this coming year. I've been watching Kevin Cole on X posting his improvement index tweets or media, social media posts, whatever you want to call them. And the Chiefs are just up a little bit compared to what they were last year. But of course, what they learned last year was Super Bowl champions.
Right.
And, you know, the Atlanta Falcons have a big improvement, the Arizona Cardinals, the Chicago Bears, but none of those teams are doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
So if they improve substantially, does that make any difference? Meanwhile, the Baltimore Ravens have looked like they've made a lot of negative changes. So,
let's preface this by saying like, March never determines who wins the Super Bowl.
Sure. Yeah.
I think we've learned that now more in recent years than ever.
Yeah.
But it starts with the AFC West for the Chiefs, as Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes will tell you six times and during training camp. And you have the Chargers getting rid of their top receivers. They're trying to get back where they're in a cap sound place where they can be flexible like the Chiefs and start to surround Justin Herbert with young talent. And as great as it is that they have Harbaugh now, and I think Justin Herbert is in better hands, it doesn't seem like this is going to be a year where they're suddenly resurgent. You know, as hot as we like to make fun, it's pick the Chargers season. I don't think you're going to see that this year. The Broncos don't have a quarterback. Their starting quarterback as of this moment. We think they're going to get one in the draft, but as of this moment, it's Jarrett Stidham. The biggest threat is the Raiders. I think a lot of people would agree with me there just based upon what they were able to do. And they got this new attitude. It finally feels like they're in a better place. But their starter is going to be Gardner Minshew. Do we really think that Gardner Minshew is going to lead a team to break the AFC West streak? So even before the NFL draft, I just think the Chiefs are in an outstanding position to be right where they want to be again, which is one of the top four seeds. And I think if you really look at the rest of the AFC, like what if we just put Hollywood Brown with last year's team? I feel like they might have won the bye again. Like, and so I don't know. I think you got to be feeling really good. With the way Kansas City has handled free agency, long way to go to the offseason. This isn't the final team the way it will look, but, I think, and we talked about this, before the podcast, John, so I don't want to steal your take because you mentioned this to me, but I think it's becoming sexy again to be silent. I think for a while we were getting into the offseason and I agreed with you when you mentioned it before the show started, like we sometimes we're like, are the Chiefs going to do anything? And now I think fans, you know, this is a sense that I get as well from the comments and stuff. Like the fans are like, you know, it's okay. You know, we know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before we used to say in Veach we trust, but I think it now it's like finally in Veach we trust a little bit here.
I have actually seen very few people complaining that the Chiefs weren't making moves, which used to be something in the years that Veach has been here, that would happen, during the, what do we call it? The,
tampering,
legal tampering period. Legal tampering. Yes.
That Andrew Siciliano said it's the negotiating window. I mean, that was from the shadowy league figures. They wanted to make sure that, he was getting it out there. There's no such thing as legal tampering. But anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sir. Yeah. The 2-day negotiating window for unrestricted free agents doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
No. Not as cool. No.
No. But, I think, you know, over the years, we've become accustomed to a lot of complaining about, you know, Veach needs to get to work. What's he doing? He's sitting on his hands. He's not doing anything. I can't think of, I could count them anyway on one hand, the number of people I've encountered this year who've made those kinds of statements. People have figured out that this is the way Veach does business. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It works. Right. So, I think people are finally catching on to that. And I think also, in other years, you would get grades for the Chiefs from national analysts and they'd get a C or a C plus or a C minus or a D plus because they weren't making those big splashy moves. They didn't make too many moves in this particular free agent period, at least not in the first week. And they're getting A's from these guys. Yeah. I think the analysts are figuring it out too.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I didn't mention that I wanted to talk to you about this. So I'll give you a second, but as of now, where did the Chiefs stand with the salary cap? I know that they've now made the Hollywood move and they have Snead tied up and you do a great job of keeping track of this and our resources at AP. Where are they when it comes to how much money they have? Again, before Snead is dealt with.
Yeah. Well, of course, the minute that the franchise tag is applied to a player, that $19.8 million in the case of Snead comes off the salary cap. So all these numbers that I'm going to give you, refer to every transaction we know about. Right now, the Chiefs have $7.7 million in cap space, and that's a little down. Right now, SpotTrack has the Chiefs at $8.5 million. We have it a little lower than that because SpotTrack does not yet have the contracts for the Chiefs' exclusive rights free agents in there, and plus Derek Nnadi's contract isn't in SpotTrack's calculations as well. And we think that that will reduce the cap hit by their cap space by, let's see, I guess that works out to $800,000. So now it's $7.7 million, including everything that we know about. And they have to estimate some of it, but we feel pretty confident on the ERFA contracts. And I think we have a pretty good idea what Derek Nnadi is going to make, but we just don't have the final numbers on that yet. But you know,
they're in good shape
compared to what things could have been and some of the things that have happened. Let's not forget that, right before the, league year began, all of a sudden we lost $11 million, to the 2021 rookie class because we had four players that suddenly are earning more money under the performance enhanced, what do they call it? The performance, performance escalator. That's part of the CBA now. And these are players that have performed well above expectation as rookies and in the early years of their career. And they get a raise in the fourth year of their contract as a result of that. And it added up to $11 million. Well, you know, that's not nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, I'm sure that Brett Veach knew that was coming.
Right.
But I don't think most of us thought about that.
Yeah.
And of a sudden one day we were $11 million short. So,
I think it's just always keeping room to make a move if something happens.
Right.
And it was explained to me years ago that if suddenly somebody becomes available, the Chiefs want to be able to be players if they deem that player a blue player, like initially it was Sammy Watkins that fit under that category. And you've seen it as time has gone on. And, you know, I think they're in better shape than they've been done in previous years. I remember one year, John, recently there was like $137 left. It was like, Jeez, cutting it close. So they are in certainly in better shape than that. All right. We got through all the Chiefs news and talked a little bit about what's been going on around the league. When we come back, it is rule proposal season. John's going to take over and tell us some of the more intriguing rule proposals that the NFL will be considering as we get ready for 2024. Stay with us. This is the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. John is back. We're happy to have him back. Thank goodness. We are missing him here. Enough Steve. And Steve is great. Steve, we love you, but come on. We need the regular host back. John, you were perusing the rule proposals that NFL owners will vote on ahead of the 2024 season. Things could look a little bit different. And we're going to go through a few of them. We're not going to go through them all, but some of the more intriguing ones and have a discussion with them about them here before we close things out. So what do you got for us?
Well, there's like 10 or 15 things that they'll be voting on when they get together this weekend in Orlando. The top one is one that we reported on arrowheadpride.com a little while ago, this proposal to make kicks more likely to be returned. Mm. As you may know, I think it was only 33% of the kickoffs were returned in the NFL in 2023. And I think this is a very key point. No kicks were returned during the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the 49ers. And that, of course, is the game that everybody watches. And so if no kickoffs are returned in that game, then the NFL looks at that and goes, okay, this game isn't as exciting as it needs to be. We have to figure out a way to make kickoffs a valid play again. So what they're looking at is a variation on what the XFL has been doing. Once again, we see a competing league come forward with a different approach about something that the NFL eventually adopts. What this is the kicker will still be at the 35-yard line, but he will stand there by himself. If the wind blows the ball over, they will now use sticks to hold it up, apparently.
Oh, gotcha.
According to this news, they've just finalized the proposal.
Well, thank God. I hope this passes because people are very worried about Tommy Townsend and the holding right now. So thank God. Thank
right. God we have it. So he'll be, but the kicker will kick from a tee. I suppose the punter could also kick, and it may be that that would be a better person to do it. I haven't really looked into that part of the rules yet to see if that's the case, but I imagine it is. And then, the kicking team will line up on the opponent's 40-yard line, while the receiving team will line up on the 35-yard line. Well, that means they're 5 yards apart. Nobody can move until the kicked ball either touches the ground, touches a player on the field, or goes into the end zone. If it lands between the 20 and the goal line, it must be returned by the receiving team. No fair catch allowed.
Okay.
If it goes into the end zone, it becomes a touchback to the 20-yard line. I'm sorry, that's wrong. If it lands in the end zone,
okay. It's
a touchback to the 35-yard line.
Ooh.
And if it rolls into the end zone after landing in what they call the landing zone inside the 20,
right. Then
it becomes a touchback to the 20. So this is designed to make kickers figure out how to drop that ball between the 20 and the goal line. And I think what we're going to find out is that kickers can do that very successfully. We're going to see very few balls come out to the 35. And if the ball, this wasn't made clear in the initial conversation about this proposed rule. If the kick does not reach what they call the landing zone between the goal line and the 20, it goes to the 40-yard line. So they can't kick it short. They can't kick it long. They're being incentivized to drop it there. Yeah.
It's an enhancement of the kickoffs. So you get more returns.
Right.
And this method has been proven to have less injuries involved because it's not high speed. It's more of like a blocking thing. And I think it keeps the returns in the game. I like it. It does crack me up a little bit because I remember in the original XFL, Vince McMahon, obviously nobody was as worried about concussions back then, and that was not a good thing, but there was no fair catch at all. It was very dangerous. And now the NFL could be going to like the new XFL for the, I like it though. I like keeping kickoff returns in the game. I think the game suffered a little bit last year when you could just fair catch beyond the 20 and advance it. Not to say that the Chiefs weren't returning, which drove the fans kind of mad sometimes, but, yeah, I like it and I hope it passes. We'll see. We know, and speaking of the Chiefs and Uncle Dave Tobe, that Tobe will be a proponent of this. We've talked about, this at press conferences with him, and cause it, you know, it keeps special teams in the game to an extent. I think you'd be losing something if you completely took it out. So I hope this one passes.
I agree. All right.
What else do we have here?
Yeah. Now, one interesting thing about this proposal, you're thinking, how could they possibly do an onside kick? Well, they can't. There's no way to do an onside kick. So what happens in the proposal that's being put forth from the competition committee is that you have to declare in advance that you want to do an onside kick. And I believe in that circumstance, you set up pretty much the way you do it now.
Yeah, well, you formally did it.
Right. But
how many surprise onside? And I know there was one in the Super Bowl with New Orleans where they won.
Yeah,
and I know.
Right.
Dougie P caught Andy, the Silver Fox in the playoffs, whatever. But I mean, it's not like you're doing that a ton. It'd probably be better to declare it anyway. So.
Right. So, but because some people won't like that, the Philadelphia Eagles have once again proposed a different approach, again, drawn from another league where you would get a fourth that you can, instead of doing an onside kick, if you're trailing in a game, and I think that's part of the conditions, you have to be trailing, you can request to have a fourth and 20 from your own 20-yard line. And if you convert it, then you get to keep the ball. If you don't, well, what usually happens when you don't convert a fourth down, the other team gets it deep in your territory.
Yeah.
So that would be an alternative to what they're talking about, an advance notice onside kick.
Clark Hunt's got to be slamming the yes button. As we all know, the Chiefs are better on fourth and 20 than fourth and three. So that would play in Kansas City's advantage as well.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we got?
Well, also the Philadelphia Eagles would like to be more like the NBA. They would like for the official clock for the game to show tenths of a second during the final second of each half.
Makes sense.
I don't know if we're going to have free throws, but you know, that's always a possibility.
You know, I know that when you have a kick to end the half, right? Sometimes when it's 6 seconds, this comes into play because not when it's four, it takes minimum of 4 seconds, but you'll see sometimes where like, in some games, the clock will tick an extra second and it's the end of the half. And then other games, it's like there's 1 second left. So I guess this would solve that problem. I don't have any problem with that. I think it would look a little weird, but everything looks.
We'd have to get used to it. Yeah.
Everything looks a little weird until it doesn't anymore.
Right. Okay. Now the Detroit Lions have a proposal on the table to allow teams to get a third challenge, even if they don't get two in a row. I think you just have to get one right in order to get that third challenge if you're challenging an official's call. I'm okay with that. I think two isn't very many to work with. So
there are so many situations now where the eye in the sky checks in, or you know, if it's a turnover or a touchdown, it's a ready review. So how many are you really talking about anyway? And yeah, there are some times when the coach just doesn't have a challenge and it's egregious. So why not? I mean, I don't think it's going to make the game all that much longer. So I'm with that one.
I understand why they limited them, but it does seem like not enough. I agree with you there. Yeah. So now another thing that Detroit would like for the league to do is to make it so that you don't have to have a player on the active roster on final cutdown day, or actually the first, I guess you would call that the first roster of the season after final cutdown day. That a player doesn't have to be on that roster in order to be eligible to be placed on injured reserve designated to return.
Ooh.
Now, this is interesting because this is part of the team's strategy every year, of a given team's strategy, which is to, we're going to put this guy on the active roster, but the day after that, we're going to put him on the reserve injured list and somebody else comes on. So whenever, for example, you're writing the 53 man projection, you have to allow for that, you know? And so now they're just saying, well, if you're on injured reserve, then when the season begins, you can be returned just like anybody else. I think the number of returns will still be limited. I think it's 8 now, but you're not going to have to be on the roster when the season begins in order to be eligible for that.
Yeah.
I'm for this too.
I'm with it. I guess I would have hesitance in this one. I guess it is beneficial that Bill Belichick is out of the league, but we've seen Bill over the years use any kind of advantage possible, like, and sometimes in a way where it's ridiculous. I remember the delay game thing. I can't remember the exact situation, but you know what I'm talking about, where he's just letting the delay game continue to happen. So the clock runs lower and lower and lower. We'll adjust. I mean, if we need to adjust that, that's fine. But yeah, the roster stuff, I think there are some things that actually improved because of the COVID rules where, you know, speaking of Dave Tobe, there's a lot more elevations and ups and downs and different procedural things you can do. And so, yeah, I don't know if you have a player on the roster and you need him to play, like players should be able to just play. Like I'm happy that last year, for example, that they put the emergency quarterback rule back on it. Mm-hmm. Not to say that the Chiefs used it, they didn't end up using it, but still I think that having that option just makes sense. So.
Right. And then one final change. I think this is also from Detroit. They want to change the way the injury report, the weekly injury report is done.
Oh, I know you're happy about this one, John. You're getting mad.
Yeah.
By the way, didn't I predict this? I don't know if I ever did on a podcast away, but I said there were changes coming to the injury report. We'll see if I'm right about that.
There were some last year that were kind of minor and kind of inside football stuff with the way they did it that were aggravating to us. And it's all about us. Let's make that clear. Yeah. It's always all about us.
Right. But, we're trying to be done at 4 o'clock on Fridays.
Enough is enough. Yeah, exactly. Right. And this is probably going to make more work for us on Saturdays, truth be told.
Great.
But, what this rule change would mean is that if you had a player listed as questionable in the final injury report, say on Friday, and then flew to your away game and left that questionable player at home, then he would have to be declared out on your Saturday report. This is just a way to make it more fair, I guess.
I mean, I think that they need to bring back probable. I mean, I know that would convolute it even more, but
well, now that Belichick's not coaching, that's probably okay.
Like some teams put a million people on it and they're all questionable and it's not uniform across the league. And there was that whole situation with Joe Burrow this year. And I know he never made the injury report, but there was like no doubt that he was ever playing, even though there clearly was something going on. And, you know, I know that seemed like they were hiding something, but even still questionable, it used to mean 50%, but like if probable would have existed, then I gotta think that in that game, Burrow might have been probable going in. And at least, you know, that there's something going on and it's not randomly like it pops up. Oh, by the way, his wrist is falling off the bone. What are we doing? And, especially with how tied the league is with gambling. I had a friend, it wasn't me this time, but I had a friend that had bet on the Bengals and he would have never done it if he had known that quarterback was injured. So that's why I thought wholesale changes to the injury report were coming. It sounds like they're at least considering some things, but we'll see and we'll adjust and we'll keep you updated at Arrowhead Pride.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, I meant to bring this up before we were talking about Legarius Sneed.
Yeah.
One of the things that people talk about with Sneed is how often he was on the injury report last year. It turns out it was 20 of 22 games last year.
Yeah.
Sneed was on the weekly injury report. Now, in 14 of those weeks, I happen to have looked this up so I can lay all this on you.
Thank you.
14 of those weeks, he appeared in all of that week's practices. So meaning in 6 others, he missed some of that week's practices. And this is the basis for all the concern about his injuries.
Right.
Is that he was getting treatment for those injuries. You have to be on the injury report if the trainers are working on you, you know, even if they give you an aspirin, I guess. Although apparently some teams are a little less.
That's what I mean. I mean,
yeah.
at the baseline, it should be uniform. And right, I don't even think they're doing that at this point, right. You know? So.
And it looks, and it would appear based on Snead's presence on the injury report almost every week that the Chiefs are doing what they're supposed to do, which is report everybody who's getting any kind of treatment. From the trainers. But other teams maybe aren't. I mean, we played a few teams. The Chiefs did. I shouldn't say we. The Chiefs played a few teams.
Yeah.
In this last season, where they had very few players on their injury report. And I always wondered, okay, is that the real deal or are they just not reporting it quite like they should?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we'll see. When do all these rule votes and changes?
I think the league meeting starts on the 24th. They're in Orlando this year, the 24th to the 27th.
Disney
and
World.
Of course, some of these will be pushed back until the next meetings, which I think are in May, if I remember correctly.
I love when the owners just randomly decide to table things. There's no rhyme or reason. Hey, it's their league. They're going to do what they want.
One of the things they're going to apparently planning on tabling is approving Tom Brady's partial ownership of the Las Vegas Raiders, which is okay with me.
Yeah. Let's hold that off.
Yeah.
Also, if he's calling a Raiders game, I mean, how's that going to work?
Right. Well, that's the problem.
Number one. Analyst, I should say, I think, right? This is the year. Poor Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen really grew in Israel fast. I heard you could tell that this is a March 20 podcast because we are way off, but I heard the other day that Greg Olsen has in his contract that if he's the number one broadcast player, the guy, you know, analyst like he was making $10 million. Now that he's bumped to number two, his contract dips to $3 million. That is quite a pay cut. It's quite a pay cut for Tom Brady coming in and stealing your lunch a little bit. So that'll be interesting to see and hear Tom Brady on Fox. I know that we've lost a lot of fanfare for Tony Romo. Chiefs fans really dislike Tony Romo calling the games now. I think a lot of NFL fans do. So apparently Brady's been working really hard at this thing. And watching him on the field for all those years, it seems like he takes whatever job he has very seriously. So I'm eager to hear how it sounds.
I don't know. I'm going to have to keep an open mind about it, but I've never been that impressed with him speaking.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll just have to see.
As long as
I find.
Oh my God, Jim! Oh my God! Oh my God! All right. Well, we've talked enough. Thank you to John for joining me on the podcast. Behind the Glass, Kramer's filling in today. So thank you for Kramer for organizing and making sure that this podcast gets up. If you like the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, you can leave us a rating and a review, and we will read it right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. And that's it for today. My name is Pete Sweeney. Thank you for joining us on another edition, and have a great day.